Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 12th of March, Anno Domini 2011. Happy birthday, Dan Agnew. And we are Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff to use, things to choose, nothing to lose.
That's good.
And don't forget, this weekend, you spring ahead. It's daylight savings time coming up. An ancient holdover from the early agrarian days that we still keep because
Why?
We certainly don't want to start screwing around with time at this point in our lives.
Wait a minute, though. 1 year, did we not skip all this junk?
No.
Yes, we did not. 1 year, we did not set the clocks. I mean, it was either forwards or backwards to save on energy.
A couple of years ago, we extended the duration.
Well, 1 year, we skipped it.
During the war, maybe.
Maybe during your lifetime.
Yeah,
back during the Civil War, maybe. I think that's possible, but...
Up your nose.
Not in our lifetime.
Yes!
No!
Did we not, folks?
Yeah.
1 year, we skipped... See?
Oh, no.
There's one! I got one! Two!
Yeah, we did.
There was a season that we did not set the clocks either forwards or back.
Yeah, and oddly, the entire universe didn't implode.
Yeah, it didn't.
So I'm not sure why we're doing it now, but we're not. We are changing it now. So don't forget, tomorrow we spring ahead. So those of you who will who forget will indeed be late for church.
Mm-hmm.
But we're here. We're ready. We are not taking calls over the air today because we are live here in the Greece Olympia cafeteria. The well-appointed. The all the people here for the pancake breakfast were here. As you can see, they're all dining off of fine china, being waited on by a staff of
Derek,
professional,
and Laurel Ann,
professional
and Rob.
Wait staff.
Rob looked pretty cute in his apron.
The place looks lovely with all the white tablecloths and the roses on every table and all the fine china and the actual goldware. It's not silverware. It's goldware. And those of you who didn't buy your tickets, well, you're missing it. Too bad.
And you know what's out front?
There still might be
massages are out there.
Yep. And the Fairport Donuts
for the Soundbites Donuts.
The premiere of the Soundbites Donuts are here.
There's
still a limited number of tickets at the door.
Are there still a limited number?
Yep.
So if you haven't come down yet for your pancakes and your sausage and your donuts, you need to be here. We're here till 2 o'clock, so come on down. It's only $5 to get in the door. And you can do that right now because we have not yet sprung ahead.
We're free.
We're free. God knows we're both cheap and easy.
Speak for yourself.
Okay, you're cheap, easy, and free.
No.
All right, I don't even want that. All right. Let's start with a news item for the day. Are you not getting enough sleep these days? You may have to blame your computer or your cell phone. Would you hand me my orange juice, please? I have orange juice. Thank you very much.
And I brought a...
Excellent.
More for us.
The National Sleep Foundation on Monday released the results of a poll showing that many people aren't getting a good night's sleep. The survey found that 43% of Americans said they rarely or never get a good night's sleep during the week. A full 60% said they experience a sleep problem, such as waking too early, snoring, or feeling unrefreshed every night. While part of the problem is busy lives, crying babies, and jobs that require attention around the clock, another is electronics, the foundation said. This study, which polled 1,508 Americans between 13 and 64, revealed that light-emitting screens are in heavy use within the pivotal hour before sleep, said Dr. Charles Ciesler, a professor at Harvard Medical School and chief of the Division of Sleep Medicine at Brigham and Women's Hospital. In a statement, the invasion of such alerting technologies into the bedroom may contribute to the high proportion of respondents who reported that they routinely get less sleep than they need. Forget reading before bed. Most Americans admit to using electronics, including the radio, television, computers, and cell phones in the hour or so before they hit the sack. The survey found that 95% of Americans use some type of electronics at least a few nights a week within the hour before bed. And it's not all about watching Grey's Anatomy or The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. People are online a lot late at night. In the Foundation survey, 6 out of 10 people said they use their computers at least a few nights a week during the hour before bed. And about half of teenagers and people in their 20s admit to using their computers nearly every night before bed. Part of the problem, particularly among teenagers, is talking or texting each other in the middle of the night. The study found that 1 out of 10 teenagers reported being awakened every night or nearly every night by a call, text, or email. 1 out of 5 people in their teens and 20s reported being woken up a few nights a week by their cell phones. Unfortunately, cell phones and computers, which make our lives more productive and enjoyable, may also be abused to the point that they contribute to getting less sleep at night, leaving millions of Americans functioning poorly the next day, said Russell Rosenberg, vice chairman of the National Sleep Foundation. In other news, we have a National Sleep Foundation. So our question to you at soundbites.org, and that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is do you often use electronic devices before bedtime?
I play with my
Furbies. Yeah, there you go. And the choices are right up until I hit the sack. I usually quit an hour or so before sleep. And what is this bedtime you speak of? So far, we have 41 votes, and 66% of you say it's right up until you hit the sack. Now, I know that you'll have more to say about this. So when you're done picking a little button in the poll, take a look at the yellow box underneath. Click I'd Give Us Your Opinion. It'll take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Ding.
Thank you. And the question is, what electronics do you usually use before bedtime? And yes, we all make the same obvious jokes in our heads, too.
Radio and Furby.
Radio and Furby. There you go.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of us use our electronic devices in bed for watching.
We don't want to know.
Well, that's right. And I did not add in bed because that would make the obvious joke even more obvious. So we didn't do that. But anyway, vote online at AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Ding, thank you. And when you're done with that, come on back to Soundbites. Check us out in the forums and all of that stuff. But don't do it until after the show. I just realized that...
Rob looks serious.
That Rob looks serious. Have we done something wrong?
No.
Well, then stop looking
he
like that.
He always looks sour. Haven't you realized that by now?
No. Here's the deal. We have talked about daylight savings time, but we have not mentioned that that's not true for all of America. Certainly Arizona doesn't do daylight savings time. I don't know about the rest of the nation.
And they're still with
Indiana us? Indiana doesn't. And, of course, as we go out internationally around the world from Soundbites World Headquarters here in Greece, New York, we acknowledge all our friends overseas who do not do daylight savings time.
A lot of countries do something similar and call it different.
Well, they probably call it daylight savings time in their language. Last savings the daylight or something. I don't know.
It's got to mess a lot of people up, though. You know, now that I think on it more, you know, some states that do, and if you're right on the border of a state that does it.
Well, that's, yeah, the line used to be straight down the longitudinal geographic lines, but then a lot of cities... on rivers, which is where it's, you know, state borders tend to be, would be in different time zones than the same city across the river. Sorry, turn your hearing aid down, Grandpa.
Yeah, yeah, that was you. No, never mind.
What? I didn't do anything.
No, clearly not. But it is confusing for people who... But, of course, now, for those of you whose only clocks are on your computers, you have no worries because the computer will do it for you. But for those of us who actually have real clocks somewhere in the house, we'll have to remember
have
to set them.
We had some interesting bugs first of the year on the iPhone and iOS devices where alarms didn't go off when they were supposed to or went off an hour late, early. Gets reported in New Zealand first because they tend to start the day early.
I looked on my Exchange calendar for work, Microsoft Exchange. We have an Exchange server.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at next week to see what I have to do Monday when I get in. I've got a meeting at 8 o'clock in the morning, and I thought, what idiot said to me? Oh, 9 o'clock, because it'll change.
Okay.
It'll spring ahead. It'll be 9 o'clock.
I mean, if you set it for 8, Shouldn't it still stay at 8?
Well, you would think so, but this is exchange, which apparently does not work the way the rest of the world
so
works.
So does it bump your 10 o'clock appointment up to 11?
Yeah. Now it's at 8 o'clock, but then it will be at 9 o'clock.
Right, right. The way they fixed their problem is if you set an appointment on the other side of the date of the time change, it sets it an hour early.
Yeah,
so that when it catches up, it catches up right.
But couldn't that mess you up, too?
It certainly messed me up looking at all my appointments that were an hour earlier than supposed to be.
Yeah.
But by Monday morning, they will be the right time.
Or you could be, say if you've actually got to be at the meeting at 8 o'clock and it bumps it up to 9.
No, it'll bump it back to 7. It'll say 7 o'clock. Right now, I have a 9 o'clock meeting.
Okay.
Monday morning. It says on exchange 8 a.m.
Oh, until it changes.
Right, it changes, and then it'll be right.
You folks confused? Yeah. I am.
Yeah, so was I. But that's all right because...
It's Microsoft.
God bless them. They're Microsoft. The theory is Sunday morning I'll look at it again and it'll be right. The important thing is that for this week, I always, inside the appointment, I put the time.
Okay.
Because I know that it gets screwed up.
Good idea.
That's how I knew it was the wrong time.
Okay, that works.
All right, we're here at the pancake breakfast with a panoply of people being waited on hand and foot by our crack wait staff. Apparently, they all fell in the crack. I don't know where they are.
I guess. Yeah.
I don't know what's going on.
No, Laura Land's still busily wiping down tables.
Yes, she is. She's working hard, and Rob is hardly working. So it all works out. We had a question before the show started from a gentleman, and I'm making an assumption there, who couldn't stay. He wanted to know about backup and storage schemes. And Steve had a very good way to look at that, the 3-2-1.
Yeah, the 3-2-1 backup. The National Archives has actually commissioned a study and there's a guy that wrote a book on digital asset management. It's called The Damn Book for Digital Asset Management. And he's worked out what he calls the 3-2-1 backup strategy. You should have 3 copies of all of your files on 2 different media, and one of them should be off-site. So you've got 1 copy on your computer. You should have 1 copy on an external hard drive as a backup. And then you should have a 3rd copy at, say, one of the cloud sharing services so that it's off-site. Because if there's a fire or flood or theft in your house, they can take your computer and your backup drive sitting right next to your computer. So you want to make sure you have that off-site backup. Some people use hard drives that they rotate and take to a safe deposit box or put in a data-ready fire safe. And that also helps. But make sure you have that 3-2-1 backup. You want to have a backup of stuff that's irreplaceable, especially your photos. With digital photos, you take a picture on your camera, you copy it to the computer, you delete it from your camera. There's only 1 copy of it. If you lose that photo, you can't go to your box of negatives and make another one. The new baby picture, the grandkids' pictures, first day of school, all that stuff that you just cannot retrieve.
Well, hard drives are so cheap nowadays. I mean, you can get a terabyte hard drive for in a USB case. Matter of fact, 2.5-inch drives for under $100.
Yeah, they're ridiculously cheap now.
Yeah, and it's silly. A lot of folks are even getting 2 of them, and they'll rotate them. They'll start them on a weekend.
Well, that's what we're talking about. And then the second one you keep off-site somewhere.
Yeah. Well, even, we've talked to these folks before, secure safe.
Right.
They've got some of the fireproof ones. I mean, it's one thing to have a metal safe, but if you have an actual fire safe.
Yeah, and you have to be careful with the fire safes, because most fire safes are rated for paper at 451 degrees Fahrenheit, that we all remember from that great book. Mm-hmm. But data and hard drives and CD disks will melt at a much lower temperature than that. So you need a data-ready fire safe.
Well, that's where they also suggest, and too often folks will put their safes and all that up in the attic. Put them down in the basement. That's usually the coolest place. And if you have a fire...
Our basement is pretty cool.
The heat is going to rise, not go down. So, the heat damage is going to be less if the safe is stored somewhere down in the basement. I mean, I've got one client that literally had it mounted on a wall. So if even the basement got flooded, a few feet of water, his hard drives and all that stuff, and he's got other documents and that other type of stuff, are still going to be safe.
Right.
In the safe.
In the safe.
In
right.
the safe.
And then there's online places like Carbonite. Which is what, $5 a year, I think it is?
It's $5.
I can't get to the page for some
I know,
reason.
Yeah, we're having internet problems. Carbonite is $5 a year, I'm sorry, a month, $5
a month
for unlimited backup space. There are services like Dropbox, which give you 2 gigabytes for free. And then if you want more than that, you can buy more than that. But it's nice to have that offsite backup away from your house in some other location.
For $60 a year. You know, you were talking about those photos of the of First Communion
right.
and the birthdays and all of that stuff. It's I personally think it's well worth $60 a year to keep all that stuff safe. So take a look at something along that line. So one of those nice, one of those really nice offsite backups.
And the other thing,
online backups.
Talking about taking care of your computer and your data, is you know, I mean, we're getting to the time now. We're going to. Hopefully, in the not-too-distant future, a few weeks, be able to start opening up Windows and that type of stuff. It's a good idea to maybe clean the front of your machine and the back of it with a vacuum cleaner. Because you folks got to remember, computers are literally huge vacuum cleaners. They're
Thanks.
Blowing stuff in the front, and it blows it out the back. And the dust and everything else can clog that. So periodically, if you can, take the time. And, you know, vacuum at least the front of it and the back of it because your dog and pet hairs are just being sucked in along with the regular dust and everything else that's been building up over the winter months.
Now, you have to be careful if you're going to do that to worry about static.
Mm-hmm.
So you
yep.
want to be very careful about that.
Do it naked?
Do it naked in a room with no rug. Take it out into the garage.
Naked?
Naked. Keep the door closed. Keep the garage door closed.
I was going to say, you're going to flash somebody.
Not me.
Okay.
So you
have a detached
blame
garage,
him,
too.
Blame him, for Pete's sake. He's disgusting, isn't he? I know it.
Wait a minute. I saw you in a dress, so.
I look good in a dress. I admit it. I do. I have great gams. Don't even pretend I don't. So, if you're gonna do that, make sure you worry about where you do it because of the static. But keeping it clean is good. If you're a smoker, there's less you can do because the tar and nicotine just coat the processor and the motherboard and the drive
we
and
had
everything
another,
else.
Speaking of smokers, we had another one come into the shop, and we literally first had to take it outside to blow it out because, again, it was one of these that chain smoker smoked in front of it. The fins and the baffles that you should be able to see that cooled down the computer, you could not see through them. The fan blades had at least a quarter inch of tar and nicotine built up on the front and back. Now, here's the thing. Now, normally I'm a calm guy.
Yeah, that'll happen.
But when the yo-yo sits there and, you know, we're cleaning it up, and we started telling him, you know, well, this and this, and, oh, by the way, both your brand new, evidently already 4 months old, CD-ROM and DVD drive were in there. I took that. Blu-ray and DVD drive that he just put in maybe 6 months ago are also messed up because you're smoking. Well, you mean I got to buy new ones on that? I says, you can get the cleaning kits and try, but otherwise, you know, it's your smoking.
Didn't seem concerned about his lungs, though.
No, he was just worried about, you know, he wanted to continue smoking, and it's my fault because I can't fix his brand new drives that are only a few months old because of his smoking habit.
Right. And the reality is that all you can do is replace those drives.
Yes.
Luckily, you can replace them. You can't replace your lungs, but you can replace the drives. All right, we are going to take a quick break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, all the people here at Greece Olympia High School for the Pancake Breakfast, and you. It is 22 minutes after the hour. We are the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org.
We're on. Nick, we're on.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. We're having a little bit of trouble wireless, but we'll get there as fast as we can. Until then, we are certainly taking your questions right here in the place. And Dave, Linda was first, I believe.
All right, come on. You folks are going to have to come up.
You got to come to us because we've only got so much wire.
I have Apple TV. I set the whole thing up, but I can't connect my desktop to Apple TV to stream my stuff over. No matter what I do, I can't get it to see it.
Steve, that, I'm afraid, is you.
In the Apple TV setup, there's a section to put in your iTunes account. And both your Apple TV and your computer need to have the same iTunes account and to be on the same network. That's sometimes a trick, too.
I did that.
Both computers are on the same network.
Yep.
You should be able to, in the Apple TV, say add computer. And then on your computer, you open iTunes and attach that Apple TV.
I tried that.
So iTunes doesn't see the Apple TV or doesn't let you attach?
I put in my email address, my password.
It has nothing to do with email or password. It's your iTunes account information.
Yeah, that's what it is. I put that information in, and it's not seen anything.
Okay, so when
you
go to
add... You put that in where?
Okay.
On the Apple TV?
Yeah.
Okay.
And on the computer.
And on the computer.
And then on the Apple TV, there's a section where you add your computer.
Okay.
And when you go into add computer, it gives you a four-digit number. And then on your computer in iTunes, you attach to the Apple TV with that same four-digit number.
Because I went down to set computer, settings and computer that said put in my, password. And
well, that's to attach the Apple TV to your iTunes account.
Right.
To attach it to your computer is another section.
Now, where would you find that? I didn't find that part.
It's under computers, I think. We'll see if we can get back on the internet, we'll find that section.
Okay. Yeah, because, I was frustrated.
But,
yeah.
But you do have to add the computer. It'll give you the four-digit number, which you then turn around and do that, too.
Yep.
All right. Next.
Gentlemen, good afternoon. It's always an honor and a pleasure.
Well, we have a problem now.
Let's talk pop-ups and pop-unders and web browsers.
And pop-overs. And,
well, Pop-Tarts, I don't
I'd
know.
I'd rather talk about Pop-Tarts.
Okay, the question is this. In your professional experiences, is there one particular web browser, may it be Firefox, may it be Opera, may it be Chrome, that does a better job of pop-unders? I mean, I use Firefox and Internet Explorer, and my pop-up blocker is on. But it's sometimes when you go to a site that you want to watch a video clip. And this is, for example, television stations that if you want to watch a video clip or even the newspaper, you click on something and now all of a sudden a new tab opens up or a new page opens up that all of a sudden advertises Netflix or your credit report, whatever. In your opinion, and again, my pop-up blocker is on, is there anything I can do to eliminate that pop-under? And is there a web browser that is better in dealing with pop-unders than what I mentioned?
Well, there's a couple of things. First, when you have a pop blocker, you can tell it whether or not to block stuff on this particular site. Sometimes you have to turn that off in order to get something to work. If you've done that, it's now wide open. Anything that wants to pop up on that page can pop up, and nothing can stop it. If you've told it block everything on this page and you're still getting pop-ups, it's a lousy pop-up blocker. I use Chrome.
It works great.
And I add one of the pop-up blockers to it, which I can't remember now because I can't get on the internet to see it. Pop blocker, whether it's up or under or over, over, under, around, and through. What's that from? Anyway, in 2 years
of using it. Stop calling me Shirley.
Stop calling me Shirley. In 2 years of using it, I've seen one pop under from Netflix. And that was from a page that I had specifically told it. I had to say, yeah, go ahead and allow pop-ups, or the site itself wouldn't work. So suddenly I was getting a Netflix pop-up. But that's really the only place. The Chrome browser itself is very good. You can turn off pop-ups there. And then I use one of the pop-up blockers. And like I said, I can't find it right now because we can't get on the net, but one of the pop-up blockers that works really, really well for me as well. So that's what I use. Well, how about you guys?
Yeah, I've been using the been using the Firefox, and that's been okay for me.
Yeah, one of the sort of catch-22s is that most of the stuff we do on the internet is free because of the advertisements.
Right.
But if everybody starts blocking all the advertisements, the web pages will figure out some other way to charge you for the content. So
but I mean, yeah.
I don't really mind the pop-unders too much because I don't see them until I quit my browser, and then they're only there for half a second because I've quit the browser.
Well, that's where I'll usually wind up. If I do get the pop-unders, I'll wind up I've just gotten in the habit to minimize my browsers just to make sure of that. If I've hit a few other sites, but a lot of them. Yeah, I know.
It's not he's feeding like, back when he's standing there. When he was standing over there, it was.
I was feeding.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's why I've been standing here and also adjusting.
It's like training a dog. When it's sitting, you say sit.
See, this guy Rob Linton taught me a little bit of stuff. I don't know how much he actually knew.
Well, he taught you everything he knew and everything you could absorb. A little bit of stuff. If you want seconds, pancakes and sausage, there's some left. Go for it right now. Otherwise, you're going to leave. You know, I know everybody ate. It was huge food here today.
We went through over 900 pancakes.
Dave counted each and every one of them individually as he made them. 900 pancakes.
Hey, my butt was here by 8 o'clock.
I don't want to hear about your butt and pancakes in the same sentence. I do not want to hear that. I was waiting for my daughter to wake up so I could take her to market. So I was not here at 8 o'clock. Although I was up at 7.
I believe it. Yeah. The correct.
But that was 2.5 hours of my life just sitting there on my butt waiting for her to get up.
Oh, and a teenager? Yeah. Good luck with that, dude.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. But, no, as far as the pop-ups, I mean, for the most part, I've gotten more and more so into Chrome. Now, there is a new version of the Firefox Beta 4 coming out and they're going to streamline that. And supposedly, there's a better filter in that. Again, it's still beta. So like we tell folks, anytime you play around with beta, you're taking a chance. So if it messes up your machine, you know, you can't call them and say, oh, they did this and that. Too bad, so sad. That's why, as beta testers, you should be doing that on a machine that you don't give a butt about, that if it crashes it, oh, well, you start over. Usually a laptop's the best for it. If you got a laptop that you can play around with, throw betaware on it that you want to, you know, tinker with, do it. Because then if it crashes, oh.
I set up a virtual server at work, so if it crashes, I don't care. And you seem to have a butt fixation today.
Yeah, I do.
I don't know what that's about, and I don't want to know what that's about, frankly. What interests me is that it's very
funny
easy.
Funny that you picked up on it, though.
I did. It's very easy to in the mobile browsers on our phones, we never get pop-ups or pop-unders. They just simply do not happen.
Yet.
Well, how are they going to happen? There's no second window. They simply don't allow a second window, and consequently, they're clean. So why can't we have that same technology where you can simply say in your browser, no extra windows?
That's quite good.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Oh, I got to tell you guys about this. As you know, I'm a big fan of the Android operating system on the phones, and I have a Droid. I love my Droid. And lately there have been tablets coming. We'll talk about the iPad 2, which just came out. We'll talk about the iPad 2 also, which just came out. I've been playing with both iPads and Android tablets. I just got my hands on a Motorola Zoom X-O-O-M, which is the fastest tablet I have ever seen in my life. It's just, it's phenomenal.
Now, is that mainly for doing video and song?
It's an Android tablet, so anything the Android can do, it can do.
Okay.
And, in fact, it does video phenomenally well. It does sound. It does everything really well. And it runs the new Android operating system, Honeycomb, which is 3.0. I also own a Nook Color, which is a $250 e-book reader from Barnes & Noble. This week, in my copious spare time, so you can see how easy it was to do this, I actually put Honeycomb, which is Android 3, on my Nook Color. So for $250, I now have an Android tablet. and it's great. It's still a beta. I wouldn't suggest it for everybody. We were just talking about betas.
Yep.
And if it crashes, it crashes. Oh, well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still a little rough around the edges. Doesn't quite do everything correctly. Doesn't quite do everything. But, you know, what they say, it's not how well the elephant dances. It's the fact that it dances at all. And the fact that I can put the latest and greatest version of the Android tablet operating system on a little $250 e-reader is phenomenal. The best part about it is you've heard about rooting your phone and rooting your tablets and rooting all the, which means that you destroy what was originally on it and load this instead. Well, the Nook Color has a mini SD card slot. So I installed the Honeycomb operating system on the mini SD card, turn the Nook Color off, insert the card, turn it back on again, and I'm in Honeycomb. If I turn it off and pull out the card and turn it back on again, I'm back to being a standard e-reader. So there's no rooting. You can go back and forth as much as you like. You can play with it while you're doing it. I love it. It's a very cool toy. Don't take away my red flyer, you scum. That was Rob Linton just taking away the little wagon that he put here earlier. I don't know why.
Oh, he gave it to his mom.
Oh, he gave it to his mom. That's all right then.
We need.
We like her.
We need the Red Rider BB gun.
Yeah, really.
To get back the red flyer.
Oh, she won it, he's saying. She won it. Yeah, I see that. Yeah. I don't remember the drawing happening, but I'm glad you won it. I am. You we like. It's him we don't like. Yeah, but
yeah, we got to talk to you about him later. Call us, please.
Yeah, we need baby pictures. You know, the one on the bearskin rug.
And his middle name. We still need his middle
name.
We
need his middle name. We do not know his middle name, and we need it. Oh, yeah. Now she's being nice about it. I'm not going to tell you.
That's why he's here.
We'll find
him. Wait until he's gone. Then.
That's right. I should have asked earlier when we were just sitting alone at the table.
Yeah. It can always. Oh, that slipped out.
Oops.
I didn't know, honey. I was not supposed to tell him that.
You're right. Yeah, I'm not going to really keep talking. I'm looking for a thing to read.
We were talking about upcoming events. We got to talk about Pi Day.
Coming up.
Coming up on Monday is Pi Day 3.14.
3.14159.
Well, so at 1579, we have to have an extra special something or other, which would actually be, what, 1609, right? 1579?
What the heck are you talking about?
1,500 hours and 79 minutes.
Well, this month, though, there's what? Five Tuesdays? Five? This is one month in a long time.
St. Patrick's Day coming up.
Yeah,
the Ides of March
coming up. No, for this month, though, yes, there are five Tuesdays, five Wednesdays, and five Thursdays.
And what are we going to do with that fifth? Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday?
Stuff it somewhere.
I don't doubt that.
Makes for a longer, extra paycheck?
That'll happen. I don't know who's paying you, but it's certainly not going to happen for me.
Well, me either. I'm self-employed.
Exactly.
Hello?
Exactly.
Let's put it this way. It has its advantages and has its disadvantages.
Sometimes it's nice folks to be self-employed.
Well, folks will sit there all the time and say, yeah, they always say, oh, you got it made. You can take off whenever you want. Yeah. But with that concept, if I take off, I'm not earning money, so I'm not getting paid. Double-edged sword there, folks.
Yep. Yeah, no vacation time.
No. Mm-mm. Haven't seen that in...
And your boss is a jerk.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Dan already left.
Here's one. We have
finally
Tim from Rush, New York, has Windows XP more than a gig of RAM. Not more than 10 seconds passes without read writes to the hard drive. I have run the Security Tango. Only issue is tracking cookies. I use Norton AV updated regularly, and the Windows firewall is enabled. I found that the hard drive activity does not exist when the computer is running in safe mode. When in normal mode, I disabled the internet connection, and there was no reduction in the level of activity. Using Task Manager and Process Monitor, the processes that appear to be causing the activity are servicehost.exe, ccservicehost.exe, system, and issass.exe. Any suggestions on how to resolve this would be greatly appreciated. The real answer is, Tim, you can't. You can't actually change that. All of those processes are part of Windows. Windows does a lot of writing itself. One of the things that it's doing is it's indexing your hard drive.
Even when it's sitting there looking like it's doing nothing, it's doing a lot of things.
But backup, depending on how old that email was, I mean, the biggest thing that we're seeing in the shop right now is rootkits.
Yeah.
And the rootkits are literally basically getting in there at boot up, and they are. Then you'll see the quite a bit of activity on the lights
and
because it's out there sending out signals and everything else trying to communicate to the outside world because, oh, that's its job.
And that's something the standard anti-malware programs don't always catch.
We have found with a lot of the rootkits that we've got to literally pull the hard drive out, isolate it onto our test bench, run some of the rootkit removal tools that we have to get rid of it, and then turn around and then put it, you know, back in the machine to get rid of the rest of the malware because some of it is, like you said, deep-rooted right in there.
Well, and I've been running into that, too. A lot of people who have talked to me about the Security Tango say, I ran it and I ran it and I ran it and it didn't work. And the reality is that that's the problem. There are some things, particularly nowadays, if you've got a rootkit, the only way you can get rid of them is to take that drive out, put it in another machine, and do it from there.
Well, that's where I've gone to some homes, and I'll sit there and say, well, I got to take it in. You know, we've said this story before, and I'll say, well, why? Can't do it here? I go, well, you got an extra room?
Because it's going to run overnight at least.
And what are you having for dinner and breakfast?
Right.
Because I'm not going to be here that long. And it's like, nah, just grab it, take it home. But oh, yeah.
And they always say I can't be without it. You already are. It's broken.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
Even if it's working, it's
dangerous.
I don't get that logic.
You're opening yourself to the Internet.
Yeah.
It's an interesting issue. We're going to take a break. We will be back in we'll be here for all of you folks who are here live, but for the rest of you, we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, all the folks here at Greece Olympia High School, and you on the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we are live, direct from the fabulous cafeteria high
downtown
atop the Greece Olympia Towers here in lovely Greece, New York. All the people sitting around in the spa on their little Roman couches being fed grapes. It's a beautiful sight here. I'm sorry you're missing it. We are taking live questions, and we have a live question person waiting. If any of you have questions, come on right up and just jump on the table and start dancing. Or you can stand in line.
Nick.
Hold on a second. We got one ahead of you. Hold on. Okay.
Okay. I'm about 9 months into the great Linux experiment.
Congratulations.
I'm having trouble.
Yeah, welcome to that club. Oh, sorry. What's your problem?
I left town for about 3 months and didn't use the machine.
Okay.
Then I came back and Movie Player wasn't working. Now, I can't swear that it was working before I left town, but it got flaky. It was black screen, so I uninstalled, reinstalled, put in M Player. It did the same thing. So then I decided, and I noticed that Update Manager wasn't really working all that well. So I don't know if it has to do with updates or being out of sync. I tried to upgrade to 10.10. It says it cannot calculate the upgrade and tells me to go to Package Manager, which is a geeky thing that I don't really want to get into anyway.
Yeah, what it sounds like is you've got a corrupted system somewhere along the line.
Yeah.
Now, whether it was corrupted before you left or did you leave it plugged in while you were gone and it had a lightning strike? Anything could have done it, you know.
Okay, yeah.
Anything could have done it. But it sounds like you've got a corrupted system. Your best bet, of course, is to back up all your documents and just do a fresh reinstall.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but
No,
when it's that screwed up, you really should, you know, if it were working well, package manager should at least be able to run it. If it can't, then there's something corrupted in the system.
Well, package manager runs.
But it can't do half the stuff you want it to do.
Well, I don't even know what I want it to do.
Well, right. But the point is, when package manager runs, the way it works on Linux is there's an entire section of configurations for all the packages that are available. If those get corrupted, then package manager just goes, and it sounds like that's what happened. So it could be a drive problem.
Yeah.
Did you leave the machine on the whole time you were gone?
No, it was off.
Huh? But it sounds like a drive problem. It sounds like something's corrupted somewhere. So really a clean reinstall would do you. So make sure all your documents are backed up.
What about the PRAM backup battery? If it was off for a couple of weeks, maybe it's weak? I would expect to see different symptoms, but maybe something to check. Check the voltage on the battery.
That's a pretty good point.
I don't know that it would cause these symptoms. It certainly can't hurt to try it.
Yeah, the batteries work fine as long as you never use them.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But I would honestly just suggest you do a clean install 1010.
That sounds so Windows.
Sorry. It's very rare that you would have to do that, but if there's a corruption on the drive, and the nice thing about that, and the main reason I suggest it, is because one of the choices when you first start up is to verify the hard drive.
Yes.
Which you should do first to see if indeed there is a corruption.
Well, it does that periodically, and it's been passing that.
Well, all right, but it also will do a reformat of the drive, and when it does that, it'll block out any bad sectors.
Well, so then the concern about it being so behind in updates, that's not really valid. The update manager should have caught up after 3 months.
Well, then that's why I say there's a corruption somewhere in that thing. Well, you could also just wipe out all the that's where you go to package manager on the command line. You wipe out all the packages and you re-download all of them. But again, if that's a little too geeky for you,
why not reinstall?
Just reinstall.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure. All right, who's got the next question? Anybody? Nobody?
My name is Joan Haver. I'm a change girl.
Wait a minute.
Okay, go ahead. Start now. You're on the mic.
Okay. I'm a change girl. This is my first outing, and I love every bit of it. I have no regrets. No depressions, no crying, no out of control, no nothing.
I'm delighted to hear that, Joan.
But I asked cable one time if I could get internet. They told me no. I couldn't get it. No.
It might depend on where you live.
I live at Selfie Towers in the city.
It may be that they can't get it in.
People in the building has it.
Well, it may.
They have computers. I can't even get computer. I wanted to learn computers so I can get a computer. I have no way of learning computers. I'd like to do that.
It may be that complex has a agreement with Frontier for internet service.
Everybody else has it, but I can't get it.
You might want to go down to the actual manager of the complex and actually talk to them. Because I'm sure if somebody else has it there is no reason then you should be excluded.
I know a lady in my building that just moved in a couple months ago, and she's got it.
Well, I say, I would first suggest, that you perhaps talk to your management there, the folks that run the place for you. And then if you don't get any resolution, give
us
a...
I'm not going to worry about it because I'll be moving, but I don't know when that'll be. But even if I don't get it, I have everything else.
Okay.
Good, yeah.
Well, there you go.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, a lot of times apartment complexes or buildings like that will often have a contract with one provider versus the other provider, and you can't get service from one because they have a contract with the other. Yep.
There you go.
Well, it's never too late to learn. Somebody get Joan a glass of cold water, please. Joan, glass of cold water. Hello?
Thank you, hey, Jan. Could somebody get this lady a glass of water, cold water?
For Joan?
Thank you. Yep, we got her.
Somebody will bring it out to you in a minute, Joan.
You're quite welcome.
Nice meeting you, Joan. Thank you so much. That's what we like. We like it when people listen to us on the radio.
We have faces for radio.
12 to 2 every Saturday right here on Member Supported. Jazz 90.1. Yeah. All right, here's a question from Don. Oh, you wait. Linda, do you have a... Okay. People are just standing up and wandering around, apparently. It's free roaming from Roman couch to Roman couch, finding somebody who's still got grapes to feed
them. Is there
going to
be a fire drill that we haven't been told about?
We would be the last to know. They want us left here.
I know. Well,
they
left us in the building at one time. The fire trucks were pulling up and everything else.
Sure. No. We're just joking.
We're just joking.
Joe.
We're just asking. Everybody's standing up as though they were getting ready for a fire drill.
All right.
Oh, okay.
Here's a question from Don in Hilton, who has Windows XP. How do I set up another user account? I am now set up as administrator. I tried to log off as administrator and click on switch user. I have no names listed. How do I set it up, and how do I do it also in Vista?
Setting
up a new user.
Oh, that's easy. You just go into the control panel, and under control panel is, users. And you can add an additional user. You can then also in there set up whether you want them to have administrative rights or just a guest user. Now, this is one thing, again, we tell parents to set themselves up as the administrator.
And don't tell your kids the password.
Yes, they do not need to know it. And this is where I got into, a lively discussion with a young adult.
Yeah.
I'm trying to be very polite here. So, polite words, he was a brat, and I just wanted to slap him, but I didn't. Because he was trying to BS his mother and telling him that, oh, no, this is the way it's got to be. I go, oh, really? I go, I've already changed it. He goes, how'd you do that? I says, because I'm the adult.
Yeah, right.
And I changed it. And
right.
I gave the mother the password. I told her, I said, you maintain it. If he wants to get on there, you do it with your account, but under no circumstances do you give it to him. Because he doesn't need it, and you should be able to check on the emails and everything else. Well, it's my computer. I don't want her in on that. Wait a minute. Who bought this? Who's paying this bill?
Right. When you're old enough to have your own computer and pay for your own internet access,
yeah,
you can do what you want. That's your business.
You got it. Until then. Pardon? On my show, when I do a show on Thursday nights, I do.
Joan is asking us a question, but you can't hear her because Dave is sitting down way away from her with the microphone.
He wants me to get up. Jesus, my one time. Normally, I'm on my feet 2 hours a day doing the show. Yes, go ahead. Take your question.
I was going to say, Nick, I was going to say Neil Sedaka, who was on 740 last night, his songs and his music, he started out at the age of 13. He'll be 72 on Sunday. And a lady that's trying to keep herself on Meals on Wheels, she'll be 90.
Well, that's very good.
And I'm 71.
Well, congratulations.
God bless you.
Thank you.
All right. Where were we? Were we in the middle of talking
about
it?
Well, we were still talking about, again, these parents are being BS'd by some of their kids and thinking that, they've got to have control of it.
Oh, yeah.
Like I say, I had one woman come in, and it was in for the third time. She's getting a little frustrated. But, again, her kids would persist on using BearShare and LimeWire,
right?
And you ask him, well, she said she downloaded, but it didn't work right, and she tried it again, and it didn't work right again. Yes, it did. The virus did its job. It got in there, and it messed up your machine, and now you're reinfected. Well, how can I stop them? This is my business computer. I've heard this time and time again.
Yeah, honestly, folks, let me be as honest as possible. If you let your kids onto your business computers, you deserve whatever happens.
At least give them their own username. That will sort of minimize the problems.
And don't let them be the administrator. That'll sort of minimize. And that's what we were talking about at the beginning with this question from Tim. He had... By adding another user from inside the control panel, user administration, you can add a user and you can determine whether or not they're just bless you, whether or not they're a regular user or they're an administrator. Don't let them be an administrator.
Yes.
Then whenever you're using the computer on a day-to-day basis, you use it as a regular user. Only when you need to do administrative tasks like add or remove programs or run the Security Tango, Then you log in as the administrator, but yes, before and after you don't.
Yeah, and don't go writing it down under, like we've said before, you know, the underneath the keyboard or this or that. I've also had parents sit there and then they also forget. They'll go ahead and give them the password and then go back in and forget to change it.
Yep.
And meanwhile, the kids have already set something else up and locked that account out. And, oh, that, again, that's where I've gotten them and removed, you know, passwords on their accounts. And they go, how'd you do that?
Yeah.
For me to know and you to find out.
Right. And you're not going to find out from
we
me.
We know what we're doing most of the time.
That's why you brought it to me and are paying me money, because this is how we fix things.
We got another question.
I actually have a couple questions. Hi, you guys.
I didn't realize you were asking a question, Kate.
Good to
Sorry.
See you.
Good to see you.
All right. I have a
name first.
Kate.
Kate. See, Nick knows me. From Fairport. We came all the way out to support support your station.
Thank you. God bless you for that.
And I have a question. Two questions, actually. One has to do with an HP printer connected to my laptop, which is my primary computer at home. And lately, I send a document out to the printer, and it sits in the spool. You know, it's spooling. It looks like it's going to print, and it never prints. And I have to go take it all offline and, you know, to get rid of the document that went out to print again. And I think I have it corrected, and I've even gone so far as to take, you know, get rid of the whole printer software, reload the software, and it still does it. Why does it
Windows 7 or XP?
XP.
Have you printed anything successfully?
Not in the last 2 months. Before that, it was doing great. And it happened one previous time a while back, and I think I did an update to the software. Could there be another update? But I can't seem to get that into update mode. It keeps going into the original software, and now it's trying to sell me, you know, cartridges and everything.
Oh, yeah.
So how do I turn that, like, how do I control the beast, or do I have to go get a whole new computer? But it's really frustrating the heck out of me.
Well, it's probably not the computer. It's probably the printer.
And the software.
If you run this in the software, if you run the self test on the printer, does that work?
No.
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 Then there's something actually wrong with the printer.
Okay.
That's not. It's a hardware
issue.
Issue in the printer itself. It may well be simply that the printer is dead.
Now the other thing is, do you have this hooked up? Do you have this
the
hooked up?
To,
yeah. Well, let's get
the
other.
Nobody's home.
We run into that a lot. But do you have another computer that you can hook this up to?
Else does it. So I can take my work laptop and try to load my printer software on that?
Yep, you can certainly try. The other part of the problem, of course, is HP. Their hardware is phenomenal. Their software just stinks on ice.
Yeah.
So when you load the software, particularly if it's your work computer, what the hell are you doing having administrative rights over your... Never mind, that's between you and work.
Well, wait, I haven't said I did it yet, so maybe I don't. Who knows?
This is going out in the air, and people might know her.
Do, and you can install this software, somebody needs to slap your system administrator. But after that, when you load the software, be very careful what you load. Read all the pages, and don't load all the extra junk that HP adds.
Yeah.
If you look through HP's driver list, when you go to their website, there'll be something called the full feature driver or full solution driver, and it's usually 300 megabytes. Don't get that one.
Okay.
Get the one that says printer driver only, and it's like 20K.
Well, can I ask an odd question? So this printer is probably...
Yes, you can, and history will bear me out.
All right. So this printer is probably from 2005, 2006. And the software, so they always say, do you have the original software disk? And I used the original disk, and I was thinking maybe that's part of the problem.
Yeah, you definitely...
What operating system are you running?
XP.
Oh, that's your... That's part of your...
So, all right. So
but download the latest driver, as Steve said. Go to the website.
Go to the website and get the drivers.
And the way you do that is you go to the website, you go to drivers and downloads, put in your printer, type, model, blah, 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 blah. And it will lead you to a list of things, and there's the full-featured driver, which is huge.
Okay.
And then the driver only, which is the thing you want.
Okay. Print only driver.
All right.
Print only driver.
It.
Stay welcome.
I got another one for folks in case they...
All right, well, that's too bad because we don't have time. When we come back, we'll do that. But right now, we're going to take a break. It is 59 minutes after the hour, and we are going to take a little break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, with all the folks that are here. In the Roman Aqueduct Suite high atop the Greece Olympia High School for the pancake breakfast. And you will be taking a lot more of your questions here in the spa. So those of you who are not getting the mani-pedi, You folks can you can ask your questions here. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 2 minutes after the hour, you are hurtling headlong into the second hour of Soundbites here on the 12th of March. Happy birthday, Dan Agnew. We are live here high atop the world headquarters of Soundbites in the Greece Olympia Spa. All the people from the pancake breakfast are currently laid out on their Roman couches, being fed grapes, getting mani-pedis.
We got to thank all the folks that did come out. I mean, this was a great turnout, and I can't thank the folks enough that did take the time and effort to come down and help support us. It was phenomenal.
We do appreciate everybody who came out to support us. And those of you who left early, too bad. You missed the move to the sybaritic luxury of the spa here. We're all having a great time, and we want to thank each and every one of you for having come. We're taking questions live, so if you have a question, just step on up and let us know what's going on, and we'll be happy to get you on the air. In the meantime, we'll be taking some of your questions that you have
emailed
in. This is Chuck from Avon who says, "I see where you changed. This is about the Security Tango. I see where you changed from Adware and Spyware Search and Destroy to super anti-spyware and malware bytes, anti-malware. Yep. When and why, and what are your thoughts and recommendations on CC Cleaner?" Well, the reason, I don't remember when now anymore, but the reason we changed from Adware and SpyBot to super anti-spyware and malware bytes is because Dave whined when I didn't. No, I'm sorry. I mean, the reason was that...
Don't make me hurt you. Don't make me hurt you.
I'll try not to. We've determined that it's actually...
Remember, payback's a son of a gun because
it is that.
Even though we're not at the board now...
I know.
I can get you back next week.
I know you can.
I can pat you down like nothing.
No, the old ones are very good programs to begin with, but these two are also excellent, and we're just very happy to be using them. Go ahead.
Well, they do a better job of it. SpyBot and Destroy got to where the support of it and the updates were okay. They weren't quite keeping up with it as much as the super anti-spyware. So, again, you know, I mean, don't be surprised, again, if in 6 months we start recommending a totally different program. Because that's the one thing I like to do is constantly look for the best thing that we can put on the CD and keep you guys up and running and clean. And that's why we offer it on the CD, because it's the latest thing that will do the best job. Because there's a number of them out there that CC Cleaner, it does an okay job. Well, folks will also say, well, can I just use one? No, there's no one particular program that will do it all. That's why we have you do two. And they'll say, well, it's a pain in the butt to do it. Well, granted, but we're giving you the free versions. Now, you can always turn around, register, and get the paid versions, which in some cases, on both of those, will do it automatically for you. Again, we're only giving you the free versions, and yes, you have to do it manually, but you're getting what you paid for it. Nothing. So it will do it if you do it manually, and if you click on the updates, it'll go out and find the latest updates and everything else. But if you're lazy, like a lot of folks out there, and don't want to have to worry about it, get the paid versions. It's also supporting the people that write these programs and just make it that much better. I mean, freeware is great up to a point, but when you start relying on it to do everything, you know, there gets to the point where maybe you should cough up a few bucks.
Yeah, that's what it comes down to. I mean, well, we always recommend that people, if you can afford it, and in these parlous economic times, I get it, but if you can afford it, throw a few bucks toward the people who are writing this free stuff, because it encourages them to keep doing it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they won't.
Well,
And that's why a lot of them have gotten it, so you can't, you know, pirate it or, you know, steal it or pass it on to somebody else because it's registered to a particular user.
Right.
And, you know, I still get folks to sit there and try to put Windows XP, one copy on multiple machines.
No, a lot of people don't realize it's the way software licensing works. It's very annoying as from a user standpoint. I bought one copy. I want to put it on all 27 of my computers. Generally, no, you can't. You have to buy 27 copies. And, well, I'm just going to share it with my friend. The software industry calls that stealing.
Yeah, right.
Well, some of them will allow you, and they're getting liberal, that you can put it, say, on your own person, if you've got a desktop at home and you got a laptop. Some of them will give you the leniency. And, again, you got to read the agreements and everything else and licensing, whether it's approved for that. But they will allow you to put it on two machines because they realize some folks are traveling, you know, or have two machines, work one and a home one.
And some software also will come in family packs,
yeah,
so you can install it on three or four or five computers in your own household.
Kate's got another question.
Yeah.
No, it's all right. Just don't watch out for the people giving the mani-pedis. Watch out as you come up to the mic.
I know. It smells wonderful in here.
It does.
This is an iTunes iPod question. So I was trying to be economical, and I bought someone's old iPod off of them, 32-gig iPod. And when I downloaded my iTunes, I connected it up, it read that it was his iPod, and I thought that I could just magically put my music on his and it just seems to get stuck, and then it spins around in a little disc on the iPod and tells me don't disconnect it, and then it never stops. But I've never gotten any of my music on his iPod, and it doesn't seem to let me connect. Is there a way to flush everything out? What's the recommended approach here?
What should happen is when you plug his iPod into your computer, it should say, oh, this is someone else's iPod.
It did say that.
Do you want to erase it and replace it with all of your stuff?
And
that's what you have to do.
Me.
Because you didn't pay for those songs, so you can't keep them.
She doesn't want to admit she clicked on it too fast.
I messed up. But so what should I go back and do?
I'm trying to be nice about it.
Thank you.
You should be able to reconnect it to your iTunes, and it should ask you that same question again.
Okay.
Which model iPod is it?
It's from 2005. It's really old. It's
but what model? Is it a Nano or a Classic or
a
Touch?
Classic.
Okay.
It's a classic.
Inside the software on the iPod itself, there's an erase command. I know there is on the Touch.
Isn't there one? Isn't there a reset button on the back that you can?
Well, that just reboots the iPod. It doesn't actually erase the data. So inside the iPod itself, there's a command to erase all settings and erase all data, and it basically turns the iPod into what it thinks is brand new again.
And that software is coming from my iTunes or his iPod? The software that's on the iPod? The
software that's on the iPod came with the iPod.
So it should be coming up when I connect it. Right.
Right, and iTunes should say it should recognize it's someone else's iPod and ask you to erase it.
Okay. All right.
So if it's not doing that, you can tell the iPod to erase itself.
It's one of those things we say RTFM.
It's under settings somewhere general. There's a reset command in the iPod itself.
Okay, and then I'm free to go.
Right, and then you can sync it to your machine with your music.
Sounds good. Okay.
Yeah. One of the problems that people run into in families is they'll end up with several different iTunes accounts, you know, mom, dad, and each of the kids. And then when you go to buy music on one computer, it's purchased under someone else's account name. And that gets confusing to try to manage multiple accounts. So what we generally recommend is the whole family should have a single iTunes account. Especially if you've got multiple computers, then it won't matter which computer you bought what music on. Makes it a little easier to manage those computers. And if you do have multiple computers, there's a feature called iTunes Home Sharing that allows different computers to see the music on the other computers. So that using that same iTunes account on multiple computers, you can share music between those computers. And most of that was concessions to the record industry that they don't want to make it easy to steal music. Now you can take your CD to somebody's house and play it, but you can't take your iPod to someone's house and give them your music.
And we have Linda from Greece.
Okay, question. I've got an older computer
which has got several hard drives on it, and I've got a brand new laptop. The laptop has got Windows 7 Home Premium, 500 gigabyte hard drive, 4 gigs of memory, but it runs just as slow as my desktop, which is about 4 years old. And I've got Roadrunner, and I've got a router. Why is the laptop running just as slow as my desktop?
Well, are you talking about the stuff on the laptop itself, or are you talking about connecting to the internet?
When I've got very little on my laptop.
So you're talking about connecting to the internet.
Right.
Well, that's because they're both connecting through the same setup, and the you can't be faster on one than on the other because it has really very little to do with your computer itself, and what it has to do with is the connection you've got to the internet. So you need to call the folks at Time Warner and have them check your internet connection to see if it's slow for some reason. Because I can have, you know, the fastest desktop on earth, 8 processors and 70 gig, and if I connect via dial-up, it's just going to be slow. There's nothing that it can't get faster. So the same thing can happen with, I'm not saying it's as slow as dial-up, but you may not be getting all the speed you want for whatever reason, and your folks at Time Warner can help you with that. We have a problem every other year, and in fact, this is a year. They'll be replacing all our lines from our house out to the poles because squirrels will eat them. Every 2 years, I don't even have to call anymore. I just know that sometime in the spring, they will come out and replace the lines because every 2 years, squirrels have eaten through the thing. And we're in the shadow of Pinnacle Hill, so we start getting all kinds of radio interference, and they will just replace the lines. And that maybe something like that is happening, but until you talk to them about it, they don't necessarily know what's happening.
Yeah, well, I live in a complex, and everything is underground, so nobody's eating anything.
Right, but it's still there. Well, actually, there could be something
and
wrong.
Then it to them.
Well, then one of the problems with internet is with cable internet is it's shared in a region, so in your neighborhood. So if you have too many people using the internet, everyone gets a little bit slower. We often hear from people who say that the internet starts getting real slow about 3 or 4 o'clock, and that's when all the kids got home from school and jumped on the internet. So you know you can check your speeds. Yeah. You can check your speeds
through
the day.
Well, but it's not just your complex. See, what happens is Time Warner hooks a bunch of people up to what they call a head end. And when you get more than 100, and it's just Ethernet, and while Ethernet can hold up to 255 connections, systems, people, whatever you want to call them, when you get over 100, they start interfering with each other, and they start slowing each other down. So what Time Warner often does is wait for the pain point. I mean, this is not just Time Warner. I'm not dissing them. Everybody does this. You wait for the pain point, and then you fix it, right? So they're waiting for enough people to complain on that head end, and then they'll split off another head end, and then for a while it'll be very fast because you'll only have 50 people on a head end, and then it'll start to grow again as they get more customers. So your best bet is to call and let them know that it seems to be very slow, and they will test it. They may find a problem with your modem. They may find a problem with the connection. But let them make that determination. And at the very least, it gets you on the list for your head end. So that's the way to do it. All right.
Nick, I think we're going to take a minute here. We got a special gentleman that came up quite a distance.
Medina.
Came all the way up here. He's been a listener of Soundbites. And evidently, he's quite the computer kid himself. What's your name again, sir?
Bobby.
Bobby, what are you into?
I'm into computers and I've been listening to your show ever since I was able to turn on a radio, and sometimes they've even taped you when I couldn't listen. And that was a long time ago. And I'm doing computers at GCC, Genesee Community College now, for my third year, and I just wanted to say to everybody that even though I'm blind, I can do basically anything I want to in my life.
God bless you. That's a wonderful
thing.
Thank
you very much. And we appreciate that you've stuck with us even throughout all this time. And
I do want to say the fact that he says he's been listening to us since he was old enough to turn on a radio kind of makes me feel old. Thanks, Bobby.
Let's face it. We've got socks older than him.
Yeah, well, you're wearing socks older than him, as a matter of fact. Yes, you are.
Yeah. Yep.
Yes, you are.
Yeah, here we got another question.
Oh, Kevin's got a question now.
Hi, Nick.
Hi, Kevin.
So I got a hardware question.
So?
Yeah, I know. So it's a graphics card question. I'm running a It's an HP Pavilion. I got an NVIDIA 9600, right? And starting last week, it started to overheat because the fan went on it. Now, I didn't feel like running out and mortgaging something else to get another graphics card, so I downloaded Riva, and I'm overclocking my graphics card, making... Yeah, I know. And I'm making it basically temperature-dependent, so at 40%, it runs at 40% at this range, it runs at 60, 80, and up to 100. But I've noticed, over the last week and a half, that now it's not really caring about the lower ranges, and only the 80 and 100s are coming on. So it's going.
Yeah.
Now, I understand if I feel, hacker enough, I can go in, pull the fan out, redo the temperature,
the fan and the heat sink.
The heat sink, the whole nine yards. Or I can budget for another card.
Yeah.
Which I'm going to do anyway.
Right.
My question to you guys is, how long do I have?
Only the gods can tell you that. I'm afraid. But
between now and the time it fails.
Exactly. Right, when's the light bulb going to burn out? It really is unknowable. I wish I could give you, a week, a month, a year, but you can't know. The reality is that it's just going to go someday. Something's going to pop. It's going to be gone. You can certainly pull the card, pull the heat sink, replace the fan.
Or start by just trying to blow the dust out of it. Sometimes it just gets dusty.
Yeah. You can do all of that, and you'll get some additional life out of it. Or you can just admit to yourself, oh, my God, it's gone. I have to buy a new and better one.
Yeah. Well, then, of course, the subsequent question to that is, when you're dealing with an HP Pavilion or any desktop that's been around for even a couple of years,
right,
you can't just go out and buy the latest and greatest because they're far too more powerful than the machine will handle.
Right.
So I think I can get an AT206. So it's a question of now hunting one down.
Right.
And that's the max that machine will run.
Right. And that becomes a general problem for everybody. If you've got an older machine, finding components that actually will work with that motherboard without overtaxing it.
The slot architectures have changed over the years from PCI to PCI Express 1 to now most machines are PCI Express 2. Mm-hmm. Even older machines, you might have had an AGP card. So oftentimes it's hard finding old cards new, and often you have to go to some of the used markets to try to find an old card. But then it's old and used, and you don't know how long it's going to last anyway.
Right.
Right.
Well, we love the industry still.
That's
exactly
right.
We love you guys,
right.
So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We do find that we're going to take a break. That's what we find. So we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, all the people here in the Olympia High School Spa, and all of you at home listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on the great member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve, next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 21 minutes after
the hour...
Where are
you going, Rob?
We are Soundbites.
You got a hot date? You got a hot date?
How can we be done? It's only 21 after the hour. All right, so long.
Oh,
all right, we're back.
This kid.
We're back.
This kid.
Let me talk about it. Listen, it's been a whole hour and a half, and we haven't even talked about the iPad 2 yet, which we probably should. The iPad 2 has arrived in stores across the U.S., and so have customers eager to get their hands on Apple's latest tablet. At Apple's flagship Fifth Avenue store in New York, atrocious weather kept the crowd small initially. 2 hours before the store opened its doors to iPad 2 customers, the queue in front barely extended out into the street. But as the clock got close to 5 p.m. local time launch, the crowd grew with lines stretching down the block and around the corner to Madison Avenue. First place in the line at the Fifth Avenue Apple Store cost Hazem Syed $900. That's how much he paid to a college student who was offering to sell her spot in line to the highest bidder. But $900 just to be the first one in the door in New York City.
And then, he had to buy the device.
He auctioned it. What? And then you still have to pay for the device. But Syed isn't complaining. He's an iOS, not the one from Cisco, developer who makes Ask Local, a location-based messaging app that allows you to pose questions to people in your vicinity. It's totally worth it, Syed said. It's great publicity. And that's true because all over the world, people knew his name and his app and everything else for only $900. Well worth it. The scene in New York replayed itself out at retailers throughout the U.S. In Philadelphia, the line outside the Apple Store on Walnut Street started to form around noon. By 5 p.m., it stretched clear around a city block. Apple Store employees ran the length of the queues shortly before the doors opened, high-fiving patient customers. If the burgeoning trade-in activity for the original iPad is any indication, sales of the iPad 2 could exceed even the most brazen predictions. Trade-in programs from Gazelle, eBay, and Nextworth are all reporting sustained levels of user interest. Meanwhile, Apple is giving some recent iPad 1 buyers a $100 discount. Gazelle was one of the first re-commerce companies to advertise and promote their buyback rates. Higher than expected demand, coupled with Apple's decision to drop the price of the original iPad units by $100, forced the company to adjust its rates just hours after the Apple keynote. Gazelle saw more than 2,500 iPad trades last Wednesday, paying out in excess of $1 million. Historically, trade-in volume has been an accurate projector of sales for an upcoming product. But the iPad has exceeded the company's expectations. When the iPhone 4 was announced in June, Gazelle saw around 1,200 trade-ins the first day. That included all iPhones models, from the original iPhone to the iPhone 3GS. First-day iPad trade-ins were nearly double that. So are you looking to get an original iPad at a discount? Where would you might you possibly get one of those, Steve?
Well, actually, quite conveniently, we still have many of the original iPads left at our store, Mac Ave and Victor. And what we're seeing is a lot of parents are getting it. One of the new features of iPad 2 is it has a camera in it that you can use for video chatting or for taking pictures. But a lot of parents don't like the idea of their children, especially the younger children, having a camera. They're worried about cell phone cameras. They're worried about cameras in computers because a lot of kids have gotten into trouble on cameras, usually accidentally. I guess you forget there's a camera on your computer when you're changing in your room.
Yeah, right.
And so a lot of parents like the original models that have no camera in them.
You want to believe that? I got some swampland for you, too.
Well, the benefit of the doubt, maybe. But yeah, so we've still got some iPads. In fact, I hope they're listening at the office. Hi to everyone out at our office. We'll be open today until at least 2, probably later, depending on the crowd. There's quite a crowd in our office now. We actually heard from some of the other Apple stores and Apple resellers around the country, very long lines. Interestingly enough, the Apple only allowed sales to start at 5 p.m. local time. We're figuring that's because it was after the stock market closed. But a lot of stores were reporting lines well past 11, closing on midnight.
What's the price point on the old versus the new?
The old iPad start at $399. They actually dropped $100, as Nick mentioned. So it's $399, $499, $599, and then $129 more for the AT&T 3G version. We are hearing that on the iPad 2, the 3G models from AT&T and Verizon are very highly constrained. Apple is reporting on their web store a 2 to 3 week delivery time for a 3G model. So a lot of people are getting the Wi-Fi only model and then using their cell phone's hotspot capability to get on the internet through their cell phone. But the iPad 2 is much faster than the previous model. Uses the new A5 chip, which we think is based on the ARM A9, I think it was. And it's twice as fast in processing as the previous model, and the graphics chip in it is 9 times faster than the previous model. So a lot of the game companies are all really excited about the new iPad. As I mentioned, it has a front-facing iChat video camera for doing chatting and messaging, Skype video calls, things like that. And it has a rear-facing HD camera that can record up to 720p HD video. Some photographers say the best camera is the one you have with you. So with the cell phone cameras and iPod cameras and now iPad cameras, a lot of people aren't carrying a full-blown camera anymore, which is interesting. But we're starting to see some real competition. As Nick mentioned, the Motorola Zoom running Android as sort of the first real competitor to the iPad. I don't know if you probably couldn't get your mail because we couldn't get online. There was a really interesting survey that one of the market research people did about what pad or tablet or portable computer you're expecting to buy this year. 82% said iPad.
Yep.
I think Zoom was 4%. BlackBerry was 4%. Right. BlackBerry and HP have announced their tablets, but I don't think either of them are anywhere near shipping yet.
Well, it's like the early days with a lot of stuff. The iPad is the name everybody knows, right? And it's also, interestingly, because of the current pricing on the Zoom, cheaper than the Zoom.
Yeah, the Zoom originally was like $800, and then they dropped it to $599 with a contract. So you need a 2-year contract with Verizon to get 3G. Apple's equivalent iPad is $599 with no contract. You buy a monthly data plan whenever you want one, so you're not locked into that 2-year contract.
Right. Although, interestingly enough, apparently the Zoom will be upgradable to 4G for free.
Which I don't see how they can do that because it's different hardware.
You're going to have to put it in the...
You pull out the 3G chip and put in a 4G chip.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it's going to happen.
As soon as they decide on 4G.
Well, we have it in Rochester, by the way.
Verizon has settled on LTE for their 4G network.
Right.
AT&T is calling... They've got a phone on 4G, but it's really 3.5G.
Yeah, right.
It's a little bit faster. What is it? HSPA, whatever their 3G network was. And then Sprint is calling their WiMAX 4G. So right now, a lot of different companies are calling many different technologies 4G, and none of them work together.
Right. What's interesting is if you've got a Verizon 4G phone, you're getting the fastest downloads in the country for two reasons. One, it's very fast to begin with, and two, there's nobody else on the radio frequency with you. I went to an event, and we were watching. They had a 4G dongle hooked up to a laptop, and we were getting 18 megabits per second down, 18 megabits per second. Now, as soon as 5 or 6 or 30 or 50 or 7,000 people get on this thing, it's going to slow down a little, but the reality is right now it's ridiculously fast.
Okay, we had another question over here.
What?
Yep. This is Dave from Fairport Donuts, which now offers... the Soundbite Donuts.
That's exactly right. The Dave, the Steve, and the Nick.
That's right. I have a smartphone. Currently have a BlackBerry. Looking at getting perhaps something different. I am a Mac as well as a regular PC user. I'm concerned about the viruses and the potential of those on the cell phone.
Well, yeah, you're right to be worried about those things. There are smartphone viruses. Right now, they're kind of minimal. There have been a couple of advertised viruses on the iPhone, which, of course, was the first super widespread popular phone. There were a couple of apps that had virus-y type things in them, and they were fixed. Google just had... a series of apps that were not in the Google Store actually came down from a third party. You had to go into the phone and authorize it to accept non-Google Market apps. And if you did that and then downloaded these things, they had a virus in them. Well, it wasn't a virus. It was a Trojan, and therefore, it was trying to steal stuff off your phone. Apple and Google have been able to go into the phone and actually remove them directly when they found them. There's a company called Lookout that I believe it's mylookout.com, I think, if you can, mylookout.com, you can run I actually got online. Hold on, I can do this right here. I actually got online. I think it's mylookout.com.
Yep, Android, BlackBerry, and Windows Mobile OSs.
Right. And so you can download that for your phone. You sign up. Now, it was free on my, I believe it's completely free. You can get more with the premium version, but you can download it for free. And one of the things that it does a couple of things if you buy it. You can back up all your data to Outlook so they keep it in case you have a problem. And you can also remotely wipe your phone. You can remotely find your phone. It'll tell you where it is if you've got GPS in the phone. And it'll also remotely wipe it if it's stolen. So they can't get any of your information.
And the pay version is only $2.99 a month.
Yeah, it's for real security, $3 a month is awfully cheap. when you get right down to it. But even the free version will protect you from viruses or Trojans or whatever. In what happens is every time I download something from the market, it scans it. It's like an antivirus program. It scans it once it comes in and determines whether or not it's safe before it goes on. Now, that's not available for the iPhone. I believe it's not available for the iPhone.
No, not yet.
Well, I don't think ever, because Apple won't give them, according to them, Apple won't give them hooks into the iOS in order to do that. They don't open that up to applications, so there's no way to hook into the operating system.
Right, but Trend Micro has released a basically a web browser for the iPhone or the iOS that checks for viruses and malicious software as you're browsing.
That's
so it's
nice.
It's built into the browser. So that was a nice way to work around those limitations.
Yep.
And it's in well, I hate to say in Apple's defense, but I guess I will. by not allowing
are you contractually obligated to defend
no.
Apple? Okay.
By not allowing people access to the low level of the operating system, it's one of the ways they've made the applications that exist more secure. And that's what we just saw with the Android virus that was discovered. It wasn't going through the official Google store where the apps are vetted somewhat. It was a third-party malicious app that got installed through a side channel.
Right. So, yeah, if I were you on my BlackBerry, I would go get at least, at the very least, the free version of Lookout. But as I always say, if you can afford it, pay for the $3 a month and get all the real features.
Is there a tablet that can also act as a phone?
Any of them can install the Skype software or the Line 2 software, which allows you to make telephone calls through that software.
And you can then connect via Bluetooth, and you'll get audio over the Bluetooth.
To a headset.
So you can, to a Bluetooth headset.
So you don't have to use the mic and
so
speaker in the tablet.
And of course, through Skype, you can also get a real phone number. The same is true of Google Voice.
Yeah, they've got an iOS version, and I'm sure they have Android versions.
Okay.
That'd be silly if Google didn't have an
yeah, they do. They have a great
version.
Android,
yeah.
And one of the things that's new about Google Voice is you can use the SIP protocol, the same one that Skype uses, so you can make calls over the wireless. Or via your, you know, if you've got a Verizon or whatever connection to a real landline phone.
What I'm talking about is I don't want to wear my glasses. I'm talking about a 5x7 tablet that acts as a big cell phone.
Oh, so you can wander around without your glasses?
Yes, exactly.
Sure. So you'll be walking into doors, but at least you can make phone calls.
That's right.
So you can call 911 when they're...
I want a big cell phone.
I have not seen that app yet. I do not doubt that it exists. I bet it's out there somewhere.
There are cell phones designed for... usually the market
larger
is at older people with bifocals that have really big numbers on them.
So that may be where you have to end up for that. But
great, thank you.
Well, but again, with Google, for example, with my Android phone, I don't even need an interface of any sort. When I'm sitting in the car, I can tap the button, which connects me to my phone, and say, you know, call such and so mobile, and a name, right? So I can say, call Fairport Donuts Mobile, and it'll call your mobile phone, or I can, assuming I have you down there as Fairport Donut, right? Or I, you know, I need to call. I need an emergency donut run, so I can just go, call Fairport Donuts, and if it'll go whatever number is there.
Just ask for Dave.
Just ask for Dave. So I don't have to worry about ever looking at the phone to dial. So that's a pretty neat feature as well, and that's available with or without the Bluetooth, actually. We have a question over here. No. Dave has to get up again.
The smaller netbooks that have Windows CE on there.
Yep.
Is there a mobile browser or a faster browser than Internet Explorer that can be downloaded onto them?
Yes, Chrome. You can download Chrome. You can download. And it depends on which netbooks you're talking about. The ones that have Windows CE embedded in the ROM so that it comes up without having a hard drive in it. There's nothing you can do to change those. But if it comes up with a regular little hard drive where you can install your own programs, then you can just download Chrome and use that instead.
Okay.
I love Chrome. It's very fast, particularly the new version 10. Really fast, really powerful, really well done.
For folks that didn't know, that's Samantha from Enright and Deary PC.
Samantha from Enright and Deary PC?
Yeah.
You mean the voice we all hear when we actually call up?
Yeah, the boss.
Enright PC, how may I help you?
No, your computer's not ready yet. So we keep joking. We have to change our answering machine to that. You know, no, your computer's not ready yet, or we would have called you.
Right. Well, particularly when they dropped it off, and now they're calling from the car as they're leaving, as they're in the driveway. Is
She's
it ready yet?
The one that takes all the calls.
Yeah, no, God bless you. You're a saint.
We actually
just for working with these guys and living through it. That's first.
We actually had something similar to that happen in our office yesterday. We were pretty busy late in the afternoon, and a customer walked in, and you know, we'll get to you in a minute, sir. So he gets on his cell phone and calls the office and catches someone in the back room answering phones.
Nice.
What was he hoping to accomplish?
Talking to somebody faster.
Then you go out to the front and say, "I'm sorry, sir, we just got a call in the back. It'll be a little longer."
Yeah, yeah. Well, I see.
Put that guy on hold.
Oops.
All right, listen, we're going to take a little break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, all the folks here in the Greece Olympia Spa. Look at them. They're so full, you can't even get up and walk around anymore. They're just
silent.
It's amazing. And all of you. You are, of course, listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on Member Supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 41 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
I'm going to throw in a little shameless plug.
Uh-oh, here we go.
Yep. I want to again thank the folks that have been listening and encourage folks. I'm doing Thursday nights now, 6 to 9, and the response has been great.
Well, perhaps you should explain what you're doing Thursday night, 6 to 9.
Well, this is a jazz station.
As opposed to just, I'm doing Thursday night, 6 to 9. Well, the rest of the week, I'm in a box hiding in a closet at my shop.
Why I thought it was a girl named Thursday. It was Tuesday Weld's sister, right?
Stop it.
No, Thursday nights.
We look forward to your emails. That was Steve Ray.
I'm doing 6 to 9 shift here at Jazz 90.1 and kind of taking it over and doing my style of jazz, which sometimes drives Rob nuts, but that's my job also.
More of a short putt than a drive.
Yep. Yep.
That was Nick Francesco.
But no, I'm asking folks to please listen. The response has been great so far. Folks calling in with requests, and we've been getting quite a few on, and it's quite the variety of jazz.
Very nice.
But all right. Next question there.
All right. It's the I we can't hear you over here, Joan. Where I gotta do this on the air. It's the golden rule of Facebook and every other social network. If you don't want your online activity to come back and bite you in the asshats, don't post anything you wouldn't want your grandmother to see. And if grandma wears a badge and carries a gun, that rule goes double. A story in Wednesday's New York Times adds more teeth to that truism. When investigating a crime, Facebook and Twitter are becoming more and more often the first places that police officers look. When 18-year-old Kayla Henriquez, possibly, fatally stabbed her 22-year-old BFF, Kamisha Richards, in the chest over a $20 loan, New York City police didn't have to look very hard for a motive. It was all there in a message on Facebook. The classic example, in January 2009, when none-too-bright bank robber Joseph Wade Northington posted the following update to MySpace. One in the head, still ain't dead, on the run for robbing a bank. Love all y'all. How dumb do you have to be to rob a bank and then take the time to update your Facebook status with the fact that you just robbed a bank? Worthington was arrested, believe it or not. His current status, which probably isn't on Facebook, doing 7 years of federal time for using a firearm during a crime of violence. Here's a clue. If you're in the midst of committing a felony, you may not want to tweet about it or up your date, your status to reflect that. Just a thought. Facebook is a trove of information for any three-letter agency with an interest in you or your friends. There are dozens of other examples of criminals who've been unearthed because they couldn't keep their trap shut online. Like, and this is one of my favorites, Mafia Don Pasquale Manfredi, who got nabbed by Italian police last March thanks to his Facebook chatter, or escaped convict Craig Lazy Lynch, who taunted UK police by posting mocking mug shots of his newly liberated self on Facebook. He got caught in January 2010 after 4 months on the run, mainly because they recognized stuff in the background of where he took the picture. Even if you're not a criminal or just criminally stupid, your Facebook, Twitter, and MySpace posts will likely be used to determine whether or not you belong on a jury, qualify for alimony, or are considered a fit parent in a custody proceeding. This is not theoretical. It's now a standard part of the discovery process. Call it Law and Order Geek Squad. Social networks, we should start our own Law and Order series.
Well, Law and Order soundbites.
Social networks should come with their own Miranda warning. What you say on Facebook and Twitter and MySpace and all of those can and will be used against you in a court of law. Remember that the next time you're tempted to post those wild photos after a long night at Margaritaville or, say, you've robbed a liquor store. We find that more and more often. We tell our students at RIT all the time. They don't believe us.
No.
But
they know better.
We tell them that when you go for a job, your potential employer has somebody on their staff who can hack into Facebook. Oh, but I protect all my, private. No, it's Facebook. There is no privacy on Facebook. I don't care what Zuckerberg tells you. There is no privacy on Facebook. And consequently, it's ridiculously easy to hack into Facebook and see all that private stuff. So you come in for the interview, and the first thing they tell you is, yeah, I'm really sorry. You're clearly not material. This company's material. You know, you're not what we're looking for. Because of those wild photos on Facebook or those posts that you put up.
And we should probably expand that definition a bit, too. There's no privacy on the Internet, period.
Right. And the worst part is anything you put on the Internet lives forever. Forever. You can go into the Wayback Machine at archive.org and find stuff from the 70s. It lives there. It does not go away. And so, I've done searches on people and found some amazing things that they, I'm sure, would like us all to forget. I told my godson this a few years ago. He's close to 30 now, but back when he was in college, he was lamenting the fact that, you know, he couldn't go out and do anything, basically. And I said, yeah, I know. When I was a kid, I did some amazingly stupid things, and I completely admit that because the statute of limitations has run out on all but one of them. Nobody was taking pictures. There was no Twitter. There was nothing. Nobody knows it was us. So we have great memories that none of you will ever know about. And nowadays, however, you can't do anything without somebody taking a picture of it and posting it somewhere.
Without you even knowing it, too.
Without you even knowing it, that's the worst part.
They can pretend as though they're looking at their phone trying to read some text message and take a picture of it.
Yeah. One of my minions, one of the people who works for me, came in Monday morning to work, and the entire rest of the office had seen pictures posted about her on Facebook that she did not know had been taken at a party.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an interesting time for her. He's taking our picture now. Look at this. And what? We're all fully clothed, and we're not drinking anything but orange juice.
But that's the other thing about the phone.
You mean you didn't get the mimosas?
I didn't get the screwdriver either. I don't know what. I just got orange juice. Rob!
You know, the phones, and speaking of the phones and this technology and everything, insurance companies, believe it or not, are really starting to jump down. You know, if you get in an accident and that now.
First thing they check.
Yeah, they're sitting there because even if you're not at fault, you've got some injuries, and you were on that cell phone,
you ain't getting squat.
Or texting.
Yeah, either or. As long as that phone was in use and they can prove it during that time frame, forget it.
And then you have to prove, well, I gave my phone to my friend. Really? Why weren't they using their own phone? No.
So, I mean, it's one of the first questions that come out now in an accident, were they on a phone? And they'll definitely go jump on the phone records. Insurance companies are all over that now because they're finding that, oh, this could have been prevented if you weren't doing this. We don't pay out on that.
That's exactly right.
You were breaking the law.
That's exactly right. And you know what? I don't know how important you think you are, but I don't think you're more important than your life.
What's that one? It's amazing once you think you're the center of the universe, but once you get there and you find out you're not.
That's right. What's at the center of the universe is a big black hole of suckage. So if you think that's you, yeah, okay, maybe you're right. Exactly right. But yeah, you know what? Really, seriously, keep your cell phone in your pocket or in your purse in the back seat. You know, there's no reason. You're not, I don't want to be the one to break this to you, but you're not that important. People can live without your answer for the next 30 seconds or 15 minutes.
They did, 10 years ago.
That's exactly right.
And no reason why.
Well, but that's the difference. You see, we grew up in a generation where people couldn't get hold of you all the time, and so we're used to it. If the phone rings, I don't have to answer it.
Yep. You had to pay extra to get a private phone line. They were all party lines.
I used to listen in on the party line all the time when I was a kid. Are you kidding?
Oh, I grew up in a partly Italian neighborhood.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy. You could put that
phone. You learned Italian fast just to know what was going on the phone.
Heck
exactly.
Yeah. You could sit there between that and the neighborhood going on and the speeches between the houses.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Exactly. I lived in an Italian neighborhood, too, but we just opened the window and yelled. We didn't need the phone for that.
But you'd sit there. Yeah, and
we could be heard three streets over.
And they'd be sitting there talking about this neighbor and that person, and they'd forget, somebody else could be listening. And then, there's no lie, two women were talking, going back and forth about another. And again, this is the old party line. And evidently, the women that they were talking about, because I'm listening to them, too.
Sure, of course you are.
The other woman comes on. And what? You talking about me? And boom, all phones went dead. And I'm sitting there listening to a dial tone.
Yep. Yep.
Number, please.
Yeah, you kids, you don't have any idea what we're talking about. But it used to be that when you picked up your landline phone, you were connected to at least three other people and sometimes seven other people.
GR3?
I remember having a scanner. The old Bearcat scanners when I was a kid.
I love the Bearcat scanner.
And you could pick up portable phones, not before the cellular age, but the portable phones in your house. And we hear one guy call his wife and say he's going to be working late, and then a second later he calls his girlfriend and says he's on his way over.
Yeah. Now, you can get a scanner app for at least the Droid, I'm sure iPhone as well. Now, I believe in many states, and I think New York is one of them, it's illegal to have a scanner in your car, a police scanner in your car. But what about the app on your phone? I suppose it's illegal to use that in your car.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Good point.
Thank you.
In a lot of states, the eavesdropping law says that only one person has to know that's being listened to. So
I don't know that that's true in New York, but in a lot of states it's true.
Yeah, you can record yourself talking to someone else, and you haven't told them that you're recording them.
Yeah, Google Voice, if you make the call, I believe, you can record the call. I think you press the 4 on your phone.
But
if somebody calls
you,
and it depends on the state.
Well, that's what I mean. Even though here, when
you hit that 4, Google Voice comes on and says this call is being recorded.
Okay, so you are warned.
But, right. It says that right in the conversation, so you're warned. But you can record it, but I believe that's only if you make the call. Think if someone calls you, you can't record it, which is an odd restriction that Google would put on. But
yeah.
Yeah, you have to be the originator.
Tell her
of the
your caller.
It is an odd restriction. Oh, that's the scanner. He's listening to the scanner. You know, not for nothing, but we're actually doing a radio show here. I don't know if you noticed, but. But yeah, that's the wonderful things about smartphones is that there's just an amazing array of things you can do with it. The problem with smartphones is there's an amazing array of things you can do with it, many of which you really shouldn't do in some circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
well, like anything else, you know, there's a good side. Well, it's just like the web. There's a very good side of it, and yep. then there's the other side that can be very ugly and very nasty.
Well, and you know what? The problem is the real-world consequences. I really worry about kids who text while they're driving. And adults. I had a friend yeah. who I was supposed to meet somewhere, and I assumed he was already where he was supposed to be because I was running late. So I got there, and he was upstairs and had to come down and let me in because I didn't have a key. So I texted, "I'm here," and I get back a text that says, "I'm on the expressway. I'll be there in a couple of minutes." Don't text. I can wait. I can wait.
Now, they could have had one of those new voice-activated sync systems.
He does.
In
I know what
phone
he has, and yeah. no, he does not.
A lot of the newer cars, they're realizing people have iPods and media players and cell phones. So when you get into the car, you sync your phone to your car, and then you hear the phone calls through the car stereo, and the texts can be read to you on the car stereo, and you can answer back with voice.
Right, and I can actually do that on my Droid as well. All right, that music signals, that's Jack telling us to get off the air. Excuse me, it means that we are done for another week. I want to thank all of you who came to the Pancake Breakfast and stayed throughout the Soundbite Show, particularly the diehards who are still lying on those couches, although none of them are eating grapes at the moment. I want to thank all those of you who listened out at home. I want to thank Dave Enright and Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. I don't actually know your name. I want to thank you for getting us on the... Sparky, for getting us online. We'll be back next week with the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on the great member-supported Jazz 90.1.